Blog Talk Radio.
How are you? We still apologize. We had a breakdown with Wi-Fi. We are ready to go. We're excited. Today we have with us Mrs. Liliane Cozziole. So I'll say that again. Liliane Cozziole. She's a teacher at Berkeley, and then also she's the vice president of the chapter for the United Nations Foundation in the East Bay area of San Francisco. And we're going to have a really nice chat with her today about something very important, the flag raising in Oakland, California, which represents many nations around the world. And she's going to share with us what that means for the Oakland community and how it extends out to the world from the Oakland community. Many of us do not know that the United Nations was started in San Francisco. And prior to that, in Washington, D.C., I believe. I happened to learn my history of it. So without further delay, we're going to bring on Mr. J. Logan, and then we're going to bring on Liliane. Okay. Mr. Logan, how are you today?
I am doing fine. I'm out here in San Francisco, and I know you're in New York, and we're on both coasts. And, boy, that eclipse was something, huh, Gil?
Well, I didn't look at it, and I understand that some people who were even in glasses also were blinded a bit. But I do believe our president has supervision eyes because he was able to look at it, and he was good.
Yes, he was.
Well, so I wish I had eyes
here.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, Jay, without further ado, because we had a glitch this morning with the radio show and with Wi-Fi, and don't want to keep the guests holding. Are you ready to bring on Ms. Cozziole?
I sure am. I'm excited.
Hi, Liliane. How are you? Welcome to the We Can Give Us a Voice show.
Good morning.
Well, we are.
Thank you very
morning,
much.
And we are. No problem. And we do apologize to you. There was a glitch this morning with the radio show, and sometimes, you know, having an internet show, these things happen.
Oh, no problem. That's technology.
Absolutely. As much as it serves us, it can often be a reminder that no matter what, you still need human interaction.
That's why we are here. Yeah.
Well, I mean, is it okay if we get started with the show now? One thing, Liliane, we do ask you.
Yes.
And that is that don't give all your goodies away, okay?
Okay.
We're going to ask you a question and ask that you tailor the answer to that. Because if you give all the goodies away, then we have to figure out what questions to ask you later. And, you know, all the good stuff will be gone. Is that okay with you?
Sounds like a plan. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, Jay, why don't you get us started?
Okay. Liliane. So I want to let you know that we appreciate you on our show, and I want to ask you a little bit about yourself. Let our audience know a little bit about you.
Okay. Well,
you
thank you very much. First of all, for the opportunity to talk here and to be a guest of your show. So my name is Liliane Cozziole, and I'm originally from Madagascar, one of the member nations of the United Nations. And Let's see. I've been in the Bay Area for quite a few years, and I teach at UC Berkeley in the Peace and Conflict Studies department. And right now, I'm the vice president of the United Nations Association East Bay chapter. Perhaps something I should mention in relation to Madagascar is that I also wear the hat of the Council of Madagascar, meaning representing the country in the on the West Coast, but also the United States in general. Is that enough for now?
Yes, I definitely think it is. You know, you said something of note that's quite interesting. My question to you is, you said that you wear the hat of representation for Madagascar as one of the member states for the country. Now, just to let everyone know what a member state is, the UN is comprised of several countries. And they're not in the United Nations. They are not known as countries. They're known as member states, just the way we have the United States here. Does that mean that you also serve as counsel to the United Nations in New York as well?
No. Actually, this is just for the country of Madagascar. But we do have, like many other countries, a permanent representative of Madagascar at the United Nations in New York. So, I am on the West Coast in that capacity, but just representing Madagascar, not the United Nations. So the vice presidency with the United Nations Association is something that I do on the side. Yes.
Okay. So for many people who don't know about the United Nations Association, would you share with our group before we get further in with you what that organization is and the understanding of it, so that if other people want to be a part of it, they may also?
Yeah, sure. So the United Nations Association it falls under the big umbrella of the United Nations Foundation. And what it is that there are chapters all over the United States, all 50 states, and the idea is to for each chapter to promote the ideals of the United Nations. So it's like working chapters, you know, doing programs to promote the ideas of the United Nations, and to invite people then and to engage them, to commit them to be enlisting the vision of the United Nations, which was quite wonderful when it was created. Yeah.
Got it.
Wow.
I know, Jay, that you have a question for her.
Yes, I have a question for you. I would like you to tell our audience about a couple of days that your organization honors. Could you speak a little bit about the International Day of Peace and International Women's Day and what they represent to you and your organization?
Oh, yes. So every year, our chapter, and I think many of the chapters of the United Nations Association celebrate International Women's Day, usually in March, because that's when the International Day is celebrated, although it should be celebrated, you know, all days of the year. So that's dedicated for the International Women's Day. And so in our case, for example, I put together with the help of my chapter the last March an event on climate change and the health of women, for example, for International Women's Day. I think the program was so appealing and right on the dot in terms of the goals of the United Nations that Representative Congressman Barbara Lee recognized the program and sent us a wonderful citation for that day. So that was wonderful.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that International Women's Day, you know, as Jay and I being UN partners, you know, you get to know some of these days, and a lot of people outside the framework of the United Nations that is where we have to, and we have to make the gap connect. Because, as you know, all of us who are like you, Jay and I, we understand what the International Women's Day is. And you said something very powerful about climate and women, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, Lillian, Jay and I could probably talk all day with you about climate and women, okay? Because you and I know inside the framework of the Sustainable Development Goals, this is a big thing.
Yes.
What I think that here in the United States we sometimes take for granted is just what you talked about, climate and women. You know, being from Madagascar, you're in a country that is rich in soil, okay? Rich, and I say rich in a way that makes one proud to grow their own food. It's almost from the soil to the table, okay? How do you think that women and climate come together here in the States, being that you're from a country that you can speak to this very well, okay? How does it apply here in the United States? Can you share that with us about women and climate? And why it's essential to each other?
Yes, so it's important actually all over the world, be that in a developing country like Madagascar or here in the States. So to give perhaps something very concrete regarding the United States, the use of fossil fuels does not help the climate, it does not help the world, which means, you know, increases in toxicity. So especially in urban areas, the health of women is quite affected by it. And this is documented, you know, by health agencies in terms of toxicity, in terms of the reproductive system. For example, that's just one example that I can think on top of my head. But certainly, in other countries too, you know, climate change also causes refugees, to the people to leave their countries because there is a drought or farmers cannot grow their crops. Or same here, you know, like for the indigenous Native American people, for example, you know, the rivers are becoming drier, the food sustenance is really diminished. So again, of course, that affects health and nutrition, just to give a couple of examples there.
So,
hello?
Wow.
Jay, I don't want to take up your questions because, you know, I could have a lot of fun here with Lillian. These are my topics. I love talking about this stuff.
I know. And we just have such a wealth of information that we could talk about with her. I mean, you know, the other thing, Gail, you know, I wanted to ask you before we even get into the main topic here is the things that they do with children and refugees. So, Lillian, you know, I know you guys did this thing with the Korean Youth Dream Orchestra. Could you tell us some of the other things that you do with the children and the refugees with your organization?
Yes, so actually from the United Nations Foundation, we had this initiative of called Adopt a Future. Because, you know, we have refugee camps all over the world, but we have this one which is the largest refugee camp in the world in Kenya, and it's called Dadaab refugee camps, and it's quite huge, and there are refugees from many neighboring countries, even all the way from Yemen, not only from Africa, of course, Sudan and the neighboring. However, the most important thing is that the children, and there are so many children in these camps, do not have access to education. And that's a tragedy because they're going to be a lost generation. So through this initiative, Adopt the Future, we fundraise to build a school. For our California, Northern California chapter, our goal was to raise $30,000 to build an elementary and secondary school, allowing the kids to go to school. and that's for 10 years, if one can believe it, so which is fantastic. And so that's what it is, and we are trying, and we did raise the funds, which is amazing. So that was where the Korean Dream Orchestra came in as one of the fundraisers for us, for example. So, yeah, so we do not want to have a lost generation of kids with no education, because unfortunately there are lots of kids in those refugee camps.
There are. And I don't think a lot of people understand, if you can tell us more about this, you know, being in New York, very much involved with the UNA-USA myself. And so, you know, the thing, my question to you is, we don't understand, I actually don't like the word refugee, okay? Because I think everyone is a human being, okay? As you know, our esteemed Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, is very much a humanitarian in himself. His background is humanitarianism. If you look at refugee and the work you've done, what would you say is your proudest moment, whether you're in this country or another country, of the work you've done with refugees and children? What is your personal proudest moment?
Yeah, you know, actually, when we had this fundraiser with the Korean Youth Dream Orchestra, it was an orchestra which came to all the way from Korea, actually from these were kids from peasant and farmers' families, but they had the opportunity to be taught classical music. And so they happened to be in the Bay Area, and they joined another, the KIDO U.S., the Korean Youth Dream Orchestra of the U.S., and together they formed this concert that we used as a platform for our fundraiser. So something really interesting, as you said, you know, that that really made my day, is that these are young kids too. So it's kids doing something for kids, and then they're middle school to high school kids age. Those are performing in the orchestra, and so the something that really made the our day was that those high school kids continued. That was their first time. You know,
right.
Being exposed to doing something for someone else who might be their age, and so they continued doing the fundraising. They were exposed to this. So again, the same ideas, like, oh, I didn't realize that. You know, we take it for granted about here, but there are many, many kids all over the world who do not have that privilege. So, I mean, that's kind of the aha moment that really made a difference, I think, in the lives of these kids who are privileged in a way, although somewhere from farmers, remote places, or from the U.S., the Bay Area here. But they are continuing to fundraise, and this really opened up their eyes. So I think that's my aha moment, my eureka moment, that really talked to your questions about something important about the refugee children or the refugee program.
That's interesting. Lamia Gale was wondering about, you guys have an essay contest every year, UNA National High School Essay Contest, and I guess you guys, could you tell us a little bit how you go about helping the youth be part of this essay contest that you guys do at the United Nations Association?
Oh, yes. Well, actually, we used to do the contest essay this year. I should say this past year, we have not been able to do so. What it is that we contact high school social studies teachers in our Bay Area, And the idea of the essays is for the high school students to write something about what they think the United Nations has accomplished, or their thoughts about the United Nations, you know, with their understanding, and what it is that they'd like to see happen. So it's to solicit their ideas about what the United Nations is, to also encourage those who don't know much about it to kind of research a little bit about that. And then we give a little monetary prize. So the donor passed away the past year. That's why I mentioned that we have not been able to conduct the essay for the last year, but hopefully we'll pick that up, because I think it's something important to write about something like this. So, yeah. So that's,
you know,
at the high school level, at the educational level, yes.
Right. You know, hearing you speak of this also brings up, you know, earning. You know, sometimes they offer money to students as an incentive. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's great. I think that's a great idea. But I have a question for you. You know, then,
okay.
Jay, like I said, you know, I could stay on with Lillian all day, because, you know, I love. This is right up my alley. I have fun with this.
Right.
So one thing I would love to know from you, your personal opinion on this, you know, often, a lot of people don't know that at the UN, there's something called the Model UN, which a lot of times is run by your local chapters, okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So many students are not aware of this. It's, a lot of times it's from upper middle class to...
Mm-hmm.
You know, wealthy, that know about this, even in the public schools in the wealthy neighborhoods. The importance of knowing that a young person can be a citizen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the gap, this is a big question, and the gap, this is something Jay and I talk about all the time, and even my peers, and ageism, where on hand, the UN and everyone is telling the youth that they are the future. The problem with that is that they're not telling them we're all the future, and they're saying you can go get wisdom from the older people, but then leave them to the side and we'll run things, or make room for the youth because they are younger and they can do this. The problem with that is we are all the same, so it creates a divide between the young and the old,
The old
are constantly being called old, and they're 35 years of age or older.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
when you create that divide, there's resentment. But then you're giving young people who haven't matured, lived life yet, even some to some degree been out on their own, you're saying you are the future. So my question to you here on this is, what are your thoughts? Because I believe we all are the future. And it's important not to say, go get the advice from the older person and then put them to the side because I'll do the job. Because the difference is, and I don't mean to be long-winded, but the difference is you take a student, I take a young person and you go to the store and you say, where can I find that dress? They'll say, down the road, make a right. You ask an older person, 30 or over, they said, let me take you over there and let me see if I can help you find the dress.
Yeah.
The difference is... Yeah, both people can still tell you where the dress is, but one understands the maturity. Are we letting our young people, like we had the opportunity to grow, to learn, to make mistakes, or are we rushing them to be older before their time, and they have meltdowns, and we have the highest incident of mental illness and depression in the States than we ever have amongst young people in college and so forth? So do you feel we're putting too much pressure? I know that was a long-winded question.
No, I think, It's a very important question that you ask there, Gail, because I think actually with the, all of your thoughts there in mind, we actually put together for the Bay Area an intergenerational model UN program. And it's a big one because it's all the schools from the Bay Area, but 300 kids come. And this is not just for high school kids or the youth or the 30-something, but all the way to grandmother, parents, grandmother, everybody is invited. And that's exactly, you are totally correct in terms of saying, you know, like when we role model the you know, playing nation states and whatever the issue being discussed in those model UN programs, then, you know, they listen, they have their thoughts, which are very interesting, and that thoughts that we would not even thought about as adults, as parents, or perhaps in some cases as grandparents. But then the grand, you know, it's youth and the excitement and not necessarily seeing the all of the large picture, and that's why, like you said, it's very important for the I would say more mature rather than the older, using the word old, the more mature population participating in the program to say, to give them different points of view, to temper that youth enthusiasm, which is nice because they're not constrained by, oh, we cannot do it, or et cetera, because they're so full of enthusiasm and lots of wonderful ideas. At the same time kind of tempered by the adult touch of reality or reality checking. So I think that's a wonderful learning experience both for the young and for the old, because there are thoughts that the older generation would not have thought about. And these might be really exciting new ideas, and at the same time, there is the old, tested viewpoints of the older generation. So, yeah, we do this in the month of October. We have one coming up, actually, October 7th. And it, we, yeah, like I said, we have, it's a big one, about 300 people. So, yeah, so...
I may actually have to come out for that one.
Yeah.
I may actually have to come out for that one.
You
were
invited,
we just thank you. We just recently had at the UN the intergenerational NGO dialogues. And that was quite powerful. You know, but like I said, we could talk all day because this, I love this and I don't just love to talk. I love action too. So here's where we want to segue into the next part of this. I love flags, and I love when I go to a particular country, or, you know, I love the UN building. I love what the UN stands for, and a lot of people don't quite understand the UN. I love the UN because I get to meet people like you and Jay, and we're like global citizens. So with that said, every flag for every country is important because it represents almost the core of the spirit of the people, okay?
I hear the way you said that.
And I hear from a little birdie told me that you're having a flag-raising event that the USA is putting on. Would you tell our audience all about that?
Yes, so this year we are celebrating the 51st year of the UN flag raising ceremony in Oakland, and this is at our Jack London Square in Oakland. And actually the number 51 is meaningful because there were 51 original signatories of the UN Charter in 1945. And what it is that on November 5th, we would like to invite everybody to participate to this event because, you know, perhaps I'll do a little history if you don't mind, like how that came about. Is that okay to talk about that now?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So 1966, actually, the United Nations Association of San Francisco asked if the city of San Francisco wanted the UN flag to fly there, since it was the location of the United Nations Charter signing. But then, you know, the board of supervisors at that time thought that perhaps it was too much of a political statement. However, the mayor of Oakland at that time was in full support of this initiative, and so Oakland got the first flag pole, flying the UN flag in Oakland. And so now every year we host a flag-raising ceremony. And this year, the event is going to be on November 5th from 10 a.m. To noon. So I mentioned about the number 51 being important. So I guess our theme for this one, which is going to be the 51st anniversary, our theme is 50 years of global collaboration and local action, and in honor of the 51 signatories of the UN Charter. So that's kind of a long story, but so every year we celebrate this and raise the flag. And and it's not just like raising the flag, you know, it's a very special celebration because, you know, the UNA East Bay chapter, the city of Oakland, the Unified School District, Port of Oakland, community VIPs come, so it's a very festive idea. And of course, the most important thing is that the junior ROTC of the all of the school districts of Oakland carry and have a parade of all the 193 flags of the countries, the member states in the United Nations. So that's very colorful, very festive, very special. So, yeah, that's on November 5th coming up, and it's celebrated every year. We try to do that, and it's beautiful to see the flag fly, like you said, because it really it represents, like, I like the way you said it, the core of, there is a core meaning and symbol in it, so it's so important.
Yeah, it is. It's the core of the human spirit of the people of that country, because they it resonates with the spirit of who they are. And I would know one thing, African people, whether it's Madagascar on one side and Kenya, or you're in West Africa with Senegal with the Wolof people, to Fula, who's over in Guinea, over to South Africa with Xhosa and Zulu, okay, or Lesotho, or, I mean, we could go on, you know. So I know the one thing I love about the African people is they are very, very strong. Every tribe per country, because it's more than one tribe per country on the continent of Africa, is very heartfelt and proud of their flag, as well as Europe is, from Sweden to Denmark to Norway to even the United States. The flags hold a meaning.
You know, if I may interject, Gail, you know, something very important. You were talking about the continent of Africa, but out of these 195 countries in the world, 54 countries are in Africa, you know, like you said. So, yeah, I thought I'd mention that.
It's amazing. And it makes a big difference for decisions to be made. You know, but again, Jay, I'm sorry, we could go off on like, a
I love it, though.
Here. I do too. Jay, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say that, you know, I learned something from Lillian. I didn't know that the controversy between the flag raising San Francisco and Oakland. So you're telling us that Oakland was the first northern city that allowed this event. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, 1966. Wow. That's an amazing story.
That's new. That's new to me. That's what I wanted to ask. I was just trying to understand that, Gail, because that's, you know, wow. You know, I'm like, the big sister city is our San Francisco. That's Mecca. And then the little small city on the little teeny city on the other side allowed this to happen. So that's And I know probably was some controversy there because I know the war was going on and, you know, all kind of stuff was going on, the Vietnam War. So that must have been a hard thing to pill to swallow for the communities here. We got the United Nations saying, let's have peace, and we got this war going on. And yeah, that could have been rough.
Yeah.
We're almost in the same position now.
Oh, yeah.
So, listen, we're great that we're having this ceremony. What do you guys do at this ceremony? I mean, what happens? I just wonder. What actually happens at this ceremony? I'm sitting there. What's going to happen?
Okay, so let's see. On top of we start with welcoming remarks, and then the parade starts because the parade of flags, because that's the most important element in this event. So the 193 flags are carried by the junior ROTC cadets. And then generally we have like presentations by distinguished guests, and so we invite, you know, the Congress people. The mayor of the city is always there. The mayor of Oakland, members of city council, possibly, definitely a representative from the port of Oakland, because that's where the flagpole is actually planted, and then. And that's why I mentioned my hat as consular corps, because I invite all the consuls from San Francisco to come, and we have the consular corps representing as many countries as possible also present, and that's when we raise the flag, and it's very solemn. And then after that, it's the festive part. You know, we have music from representing the diversity of Oakland. Something very important I should mention is that we try to also have the voice of youth heard. And so they read a little brief essays about what they think the United Nations is. Kind of like the essay contest, but these are, you know, students from the community college of the school around UC Berkeley, perhaps. And then the event ends with more ethnic dances, like lion dance or, you know, various ethnicities dance, and choral music from many different religions, and then closing remarks. So I guess that's kind of generally what happens. So it's I think one should remember that all of this is because of the joint effort of the UNA East Bay, the city of Oakland, the schools, the port, and all of the community VIPs. So I hope that was not too long, because my work is still in progress for firming up the program, but that's generally the chronology that we follow.
I want to ask real quickly, is Oakland in danger of ever losing the flag-raising ceremony? Does San Francisco want that flag-raising ceremony back over there? Do we get to have – Oakland gets to have this wonderful event forever?
Yes, I think it's going to be there, and I don't think it's going to disappear, because I think the United Nations is going to still have its important role in the world. Actually, it's the only one doing what it does in the world, with the 193 nations together. So that's what's the beauty of the vision when they created the United Nations, I think.
Wow. Well, one of the things, at this flag raising ceremony, I'd like to know, what do kids and what do people get to experience? What is the experience that they walk away with? And do they have a better understanding of how much work the UN puts in to really keep the world in order?
Mm-hmm. You know, something very important, I think, for the children to take away. I mean, the high school ROTC students who carry the flag is that actually, I mentioned the diplomatic corps, so then they realize that actually the flag they're carrying actually belongs to a physical country with a representative in the Bay Area. So there are lots of photo taking, and I think with the speeches as a context, I think it gives them a sense that they are part, even though their role is to carry the flags, just the flags, for example. It's not just carrying the flag, but then they're given the meaning of it and their place in the world. So it places them out of the just their high school, you know, in Oakland, wherever that might be, but it also places them like, oh, wow, yeah, so this flag I'm carrying belongs to this country, and this is what the United Nations know. Perhaps that might be the first time they might hear about the United Nations even. So I think it's important because it's something concrete and palpable that they actually see. It's not just like a theoretical, beautiful vision somewhere, you know, like in the sky or something. So I think that's what we hope, at least, and I think I've seen it, that's kind of the takeaway for these kids, you know, something, a learning experience, a contact with the actual diplomats from those countries. Not all of them, because not all of them are represented in San Francisco, but as many as we have represented and who are invited and who could come. So I think,
wow.
Lillian, who are the other organizations involved in this ceremony, such as, you know, Sister Cities? Are there any other nonprofits or any other organizations that are involved in this flag raising ceremony?
You know, very generally. The city of Oakland, as I mentioned, and then the school, and then the some NGO contributes, you know, in kind via their, if they have performers or they contribute in kind things like for the children, like water for the children, or contributing, for example, the rental of a van which carry all of these 193 flags, for example. And so we usually include them as our co-sponsors. So the Port of Oakland is one of our big sponsor for this, besides the city of Oakland, and we of course the UNA, but we wish, and we are very happy that this year we are working with the sister cities, of which Jay is part of, and that's very exciting because that's kind of a natural group to be organizing and part of this a wonderful event.
Wow. Well, we are going to be supporting Jay. Jay and I are partners, and we're partners in Savoy and Listen Gives, so anything all of us can do to support, we definitely will. I think one of the things that I would really, really like our audience to know is the UNA USA, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is their specific function?
Their function is to carry out the vision of the United Nations, and they carry out the vision via programs that will engage people and commit people to the vision of the United Nations. So, for example, next week, the UNA East Bay is going to have a program on nuclear deterrence. Because just last week, you know what's going on with all of the standoff, with the escalating issue with North Korea, etc. So that's the kind of program we do, for example. Or it might be about human rights. Yes. So
but,
that's on August 29th. And then we have experts in the field. We are very fortunate in the Bay Area to have the wonderful institutions who can provide us with key experts in various fields. So we are very fortunate in that sense. So that's an example. So it's, you know, kind of promoting the idea of the United Nations so that people are aware of it. So, but then beyond awareness, to engage them to be to participate and do something about issues that's happening in the world among those, you know, the development goals, for example.
Yes, you know, when we speak of nuclear disarmament, you know, what a lot of people don't know about what's going on over in Asia and even parts of Africa, off the coast mm-hmm. of any of these continents are islands where military, any military, practices
yes.
nuclear testing.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And so when we wonder why our climate is polluted, as an example, right in the South Asian region for the nuclear disarmament, there are two perfectly designed circles where back in the
mm-hmm.
40s, they conducted nuclear testing. Governments, no one knows. But there's still a metal plate over one of the holes. And on
yeah.
the other hole,
mm-hmm.
it's completely bare because that's
mm-hmm.
where they did the nuclear testing of one of the biggest nuclear bombs. It
mm-hmm.
is shocking that it hasn't
it
affected
did.
Guam, North Korea, Thailand, and the rest. So, you know,
uh-huh.
these are important things to know why the importance of the United Nations Foundation and the
yeah.
work that Lillian does.
Okay.
So would you share with our audience how people can become aware, you know, like where can people go to read about these things? What are some of the things you
yeah.
recommend, Lillian? All ages, where can people go besides the UNA or the UN,
mm-hmm.
where can people actually
mm-hmm.
go? What are good newspapers or good places to learn about this
uh-huh.
information?
Okay, so I'll get back for just a couple of seconds regarding the, you mentioned the coast where nuclear tests are being conducted in Asia, but actually Madagascar, you see the Indian Ocean is right now being claimed as a nuclear-free zone or a zone of peace. And that's
wow.
going to be discussed in September.
Amazing.
But then to so it's all over the place, Gail and Jay. But to answer your question, like where would be the best place to find out about this? If one checks on the web and checks UN Wire, that would be a good place to have kind of the big bullet points of what's happening per day or per month, depending on what you are looking for in terms of, oh, what's going on here. And, of course, you know, listening to the variety of news, there is always something about the UN peacekeeping UN peacekeeping groups doing certain activities. But I think the UN Wire is a good source for finding about that. And then I didn't even know about the UN radio or station that people can have access to and listen so that they are aware of it. And then at the local level, we try to go to fairs and to have a tabling there so that people know, like, oh, what is the United Nations? So it's among, you know, like we have various street fairs or special festivals, and then we always try to have a tabling at those events so that people are aware, and we always have brochures, what does the UNA does, be a member, participate, and yeah, so I guess those are things that I can think of immediately, so the UN Wire, and then UN Wire, sorry, UN Wire, to get news, and that's really all over the world very quickly, I think. Getting
wow.
news, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we thank you for your time, Lillian.
Lillian, I just have one more question, Gail. And that question was, if I wanted to be a volunteer for the United Nations or the UN Association, how would I go and be a volunteer? What do I need to do?
Okay. So, for example, for the UNA East Bay chapter, you just Google UNA East Bay chapter, and then there is actually a membership form there. And something very important is that because we want the youth to participate, is that college-age students up to 25 years of age, membership is free. So there is no excuses. We try to have, all the campus students, and actually there is a branch of the UNA at UC Berkeley, at San Jose State, different institutions around here. And same thing like us, they try to have programs to make people aware of activities of the United Nations and to engage students. And, if one checks the website, UNA Association, and if it were just in the Bay Area, then you have San Francisco UN Association, and then we also have a larger, the Northern California division. But I think depending, people might want to start with the city that they're in to check whether there is a chapter. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we thank you so much, Lillian, for your time.
Oh,
and we'd love to have
you
come back again. Would you come back again and join us?
I'd love to. First of all, I would like to thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity. I also learned things as you were asking your questions. So this was... kept me on my toes to when you asked the questions. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, because we learn a lot too as well. And you enjoy your day, and we hope you'll come on again before Flag Day, so that we can really remind our audience. Would you like to do that?
Yes. So this is again an invitation to all those who can come to the Jack London Square on November 5th. And it's from 10 to noon. It's free. It's an event free, and it's a free event, and it's for the whole family. So come and enjoy and learn and unlearn something soon, but definitely learn. Yes.
Well, we thank you and have a wonderful day. Jay, as always, we will see each other next week, and I'm sorry for the send-off like this. I am afraid that my... the radio show technology is about to act very strange with us, so I'm going to let everyone go.
Thank you very much again.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.